Hey, this is Adam Richman from Food Network UK, and you are feasting your ears on the Hotspur podcast. Come on, you Spurs.
Yeah, well, welcome to a brand new Hot Spurs podcast. It is Friday, the 22nd of May, 2020. I am Steve in Leonce in Essex, and we've got a very special guest today. Huge Spurs fan, author, and amongst other things, it's Julie Welch. How are you doing, Julie?
I'm doing fine. Like everybody else, I'm sitting at the laptop and talking to you, Steve.
Thinking about Spurs 24/7, as we all do these days. We're missing football, I'm sure.
It's very strange, isn't it? I tried watching the Bundesliga, and it just didn't mean anything to me. I mean, it's got to be Spurs or nothing, as far as I'm concerned. Otherwise, I just don't kind of hook on to it.
No, you're right. I mean, I try and watch as much football as I don't. I mean, I don't even watch League One, League Two, Championship when it's on telly, let alone foreign football. And although I do go and watch my local team, Southend, but I don't follow any other football apart from the Premier League. And you're right. I tried to watch the Bundesliga and tried to get into it, and it was nothing. So I just switched it over in the end. Or had it on in the background, but massively missing football. But you know, let's not bring it down. Hope they're back in training, kind of, rightly or wrongly. We won't get into that. But what we'll do is we'll try and walk you down memory lane. It's my Spurs journey, of course.
Okay.
And we've got you on because you are not only a massive Spurs fan, you're part of the fabric. You've actually contributed massively in our history. Just a couple of Spurs things. There's a kind of a history Spurs book, is that right?
I'm the author and Spurs sort of official biographer of the biography of Tottenham Hotspur, which came out in its third edition about, 3 months ago, something like that. Just really great timing. You can order it from the Spurs shop or all good bookshops and get your fix of Spurs that way. And it takes us up to the end of last season, which was kind of the end of football as we know it.
Mm. Yeah, in many ways. And what about you also... our friend of ours, Rob White, co-wrote his book with about his dad.
That's right, The Ghost of White Hart Lane. Rob and I put that together, and that was a lovely thing to do. It was really, really great because it was Rob's story and his dad's story, and we had, I think it's probably one of the nicest books I was ever involved with, and it's a bestseller, and we still get royalties for it, so that's good.
That's awesome.
And my other Spurs claim to fame is that I wrote those Glory Days, which was shown on Film 4, coincidentally, a couple of weeks ago, something like that.
And it's just wonderful. I mean, I remember it as a kid. I had it on VHS, and I watched it over and over again.
Oh, Steve, you make me feel so old. People remember it when they were kids.
Well, I'm in my early 40s. I don't know.
I'm not saying how old I am.
I certainly had that on VHS, and I have a similar type of film that reminded me of as I was watching it was Patang Yan Kippabang. It reminded me of that a lot. Very similar sort of this. Although it's Spurs at the heart of it, it's the friendship and the school and everything, and taking you what those friendships were like, and that roller coaster of emotions. I loved it because I watched it with my boy for the first time. And I hadn't seen it for many years, and it was just wonderful watching it. So, of course, I tweeted you and just said, I'm watching it with my boy, it's lovely. And you kindly tweeted me back, and I thought, oh, let's get her on the show, because I bet you got some great memories. So that was lovely as well. But the other thing I wanted to do, and we'll touch on the film as we go through as well. But the one thing I noticed that you wrote a book about the marathon.
I did, yeah.
Well, that I'm a marathon runner. I've done about 12 marathons now, 9 being London Marathon. And I had to wait for the government clearance last week because obviously they cancelled the marathon. So, but I'd done all my training, so I wanted to do it. So I did it. I did 26 miles last week, just round Southend. But I saw that you did the book, and I thought, oh, I must buy that.
I think it's probably quite hard to get hold of now. I mean, you've done, I think it's probably 2 more London marathons than I have. I did my last in 2012 when I beat Ed Balls, the MP, in a sprint finish. But I mean, I do a lot of off-road now. I do sort of ultras off-road. And at my stage, I don't know if you've seen my Twitter biog, but I describe myself as old lady runner, so I'm very slow these days, and off-road is much easier, but I do sort of 30s and 50s, and I've even done 100.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, shame me. Well, that's brilliant. I've got a mate who I always run it with, massive Spurs fan, we're determined 1 year to runners huddle and waddle. So we're going to have the Hummel 87 Spurs shirts with Hoddle and Waddle on the back, with the mullets and everything. And we're going to do it one day.
Steve, are you actually going to have the real mullet? I mean, is your hair going to be in a mullet situation?
Oh, there's a challenge. I could have done it a few weeks ago, but then my daughter decided to shave it all off because she was so embarrassed. So I'll have to grow it again. But I think you can get decent wigs these days, but I think that'll be quite funny, you know, like running along together.
And are you going to sing Diamond Lights
all the way round? See, look, if you're a Spurs fan and you're listening to this, you know, you get those questions on Twitter and Facebook, and everyone says, what makes a proper Spurs fan? Whether you go to the games, whether you do this, whether you don't buy a half and half scarf or whatever you do. A proper true Spurs fan, in my opinion, is if you can sing probably the first verse and the chorus of Diamond Lights. Would you agree, Julie?
You're not going to ask me to sing it. Definitely.
No, because you mentioned it, so I know you know it. But a proper Spurs fan definitely knows Diamond Lights. So that's fantastic. Right, what we'll do then is we'll get into the questions. Some a little bit more tricky than others. Certainly some quirky ones in there as well. We'll start off then with, Julie, what is your favourite football club?
Oh, I think after sort of a long pause for thought, I'd probably have to say Tottenham Hotspur.
And why is it? And by the way, and I'm going to ask you why that is, but also I've just remembered you did a lovely poem recently, which was on Twitter. So everybody go and find that. It's a brilliant little Spurs poem, and it really makes you, every Spurs fan can relate to it. But yeah, why are you a Spurs fan?
Now that is really, really, really a long story, but we go way back to the double winning season when I was a child, and basically I fell for Danny Blanchflower. When I've noticed with my boys that they always sort of supported the football team that they first saw when the football team was winning. So one of my boys is a Liverpool supporter, one is a Newcastle supporter, and the other is a Man United supporter. I mean, I've tried to convert them, but it's not possible. But, you know, the first team you fall in love with, I think kids, unless they've got family influence, they go for winners. And of course, you know, when I started supporting Spurs, they were supreme.
But was it Danny Blanchflower you fell in love with?
I sort of really fell in love with the whole sort of
which
team
first.
I guess probably Danny Blanchflower because he wrote books. I mean, wow. He was, you know, everybody sort of said, oh, footballers are sick, you know, they're oafs and, you know, what was I doing? And I thought, here is this incredibly intelligent man who was also very good looking at the time. Mm. And, you know, he worked as a journalist while he was being a footballer. The first football book I ever bought was his sort of biography, The Double and Before.
Yeah.
And I've still got it. And I sort of look at it from time to time. I just thought this man is just so unusual and so brilliant and sort of maybe a bit eccentric. And as I was a bit eccentric as well, I thought, well, this is a match made in heaven. I mean, the whole Spurs thing was just so fantastic then. Mm-hmm. I do think it's a shame that, you know, we kind of hang on to our glorious past a bit because nothing's ever quite been the same again. But that's that. When you start thinking that way, it gets a bit depressing, isn't it?
You've always got to think, we'll get there again. We'll get there again. I'm sure we will.
That's the definition of being a Spurs supporter. You think, well, you know, the Messiah is coming again.
And in the film, I don't think you played Julie meeting Danny Blanchflower. Is that right? You weren't the actress.
Oh, no. I mean...
So, but did you meet Danny? Have you met Danny?
Oh, gosh, yeah. I mean, the film starts, actually, with a true incident, which is the first season I was a football reporter for The Observer.
Yeah.
Again, we're going way back to 1973. It was my fourth match, Crystal Palace v Middlesbrough at Selhurst Park. And, you know, it was quite difficult for a young woman to be a football reporter. I was the only one.
Yeah.
And I remember I came out of the ground and I was trying... I mean, this is the opening scene of those glory days, and it really happened. I was waiting at the top of White Horse Hill trying to get a taxi back to Fleet Street, and this Mercedes drew up, and this Northern Irish voice said, "Would you like a lift?" And I looked in, and it was Danny Blanchflower. Wow. I mean, he had actually been reporting the game, but I was in so much of a sort of tiz about getting my report done and everything that I hadn't even noticed him. But there he was. There was God. Yeah. So we had this lift back to Fleet Street. And, of course, you know, after that, I kind of got to know Danny quite well because, you know, we sort of met at matches and things like that. Yeah. And he agreed to appear in the film. And he was just lovely, just such a nice man, you know. Totally bonkers. Mm-hmm. He could talk for Great Britain, really. I mean, you know, you'd sort of get into conversation with him, but it was never a conversation, really, because he just would never shut up. He loved talking. I mean, he was just such an amazing and an interesting man. I think probably the most interesting person I've ever met. And I still admire him enormously. Yeah, you know, yes. He left us far too early. The rest of that double winning side, I mean, you know, I had a crush on Bobby Smith because he was terribly good looking. And I used to write fan fiction, you know, with a sort of Bobby Smith character as a star and stuff like that.
Yeah.
What was lovely when I was first researching the biography of Tottenham Hotspur was sort of getting to know through interviewing some of those other players. I mean, you know, I met Cliff Jones was wonderful. I met Terry Dyson, another really, really bright bloke. I interviewed Bobby. It was lovely to sort of get to know these people and sort of meet them as personalities and real people, not just sort of, you know, these kind of gods on a football pitch.
Yeah. Did any of them try it on with you?
Well, bearing in mind that I was, you know, by the time I was working on the first edition, I sort of qualified nearly for a freedom pass. I don't think that. Well, Bobby Smith did, bless his heart, did try a little snog.
There you go. See? I thought we'd get a little bit
so sweet.
Juicy gossip there.
Yeah.
Brilliant. All right, let's move on swiftly. What's your favourite country?
My favourite country, Scotland.
Ah, brilliant. Why is that?
Because I've got a lot of very nice Scottish friends. I made quite a few when I was researching The Ghost of White Hart Lane with Rob, who, of course, is half Scottish.
Yeah.
They just, I mean, and of course, my sister, now no longer with us, unfortunately, she and her family lived in Aberdeen, and her boys, my nephews and nieces, still live up there. So if it hadn't been lockdown, I'd probably be up in Aberdeen visiting them at the moment, because I do that every year or so.
Is there a food that you have when you go up there that you can't get down here?
Tunnocks.
What's that?
Wafers, wafer biscuits.
Right, and they're nice.
They are fantastic. can't beat them. I, you know, this is one of the sort of tragedies of lockdown, that I can't get my tunnocks, because I sort of always bring a, you know, suitcase with me and take home a load of tunnocks, right, wafers.
Let's bring it down a little bit. Which player is the player that you dislike the most in the history of football, or now, a player that pops into your mind, you think, oh, I can't stand him? Doesn't have to be a Spurs, probably not a Spurs player.
No, never.
Someone
never
that pops in your mind.
Didier Drogba.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, well, we've had plenty of Chelsea players, but we haven't had him yet. So why don't you like him?
Because he scored the winning penalty that stole the Champions League place from Tottenham.
There you go. Makes sense. That is why is he not everybody's most disliked player? You're absolutely right.
I have to say, you know, if I'm being objective, he was an absolutely marvellous player. Yeah. I mean, because of course, when I was a football reporter, I had to be objective. But since I don't report football matches anymore, I don't have to be objective anymore. But absolutely, being objective, yeah, he just a terrific player, but I hate him.
I'll tell you a very, very quick story, and I don't want to get controversial here, but we were chatting on holiday one time a few years ago to a Manchester guy, and he started going on about the colour of people's skin and how they were so lazy. And me and my dad, in one voice, said, Didier Drogba? And it completely shut him up. And just reminded me of that story, how stupid and ignorant people can be.
Good for you.
Oh, yeah, they're so lazy, those bloody blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And we said, Didier Drogba? Right, go away. Right, anyway, what football club do you dislike the most?
Oh, that is a difficult question, isn't it? Because traditionally, of course, I had this loathing of Arsenal. But since they've sort of not been so good, my sort of hatred kind of has worn off a bit. Not an enormous amount. I really hate Chelsea, I have to say. you know, it's terrible, isn't it? Because really, there should be no room in your life for hate, because it only affects you, not the people that you hate. They don't care. So you're just sort of eating yourself up with bile and bitterness and hatred, and it's not doing you any good. But I do hate Chelsea. I really do. and that sort of classic victory over Chelsea at Stamford Bridge, when Dele Alli just played an absolute blinder. I've got that on my lock screen of him sauntering past the Chelsea crowd after scoring. And he just looks wonderful. You know, he's so cool. He looks like a little boy who's sort of, I don't know, been ringing doorbells, then running away. You know, he just looks naughty and triumphant. And you see these sort of Chelsea gammon faces behind him, just sort of racked with hatred and grief and bitterness. And I just love that photo. I've sort of kept it forever.
And what about, who is your favourite ever football player?
My favourite ever football player, is that, you know, somebody I like personally, or somebody that, you know, I like to watch?
Let's stick to football rather than some that you fancy.
No, it's not even fancy. You know, it's just, you know, footballers I've met who have been really, really nice people.
Oh, let's do both then. So that's all right. A good one. So let's do your favourite footballer in terms of talent, and then your favourite footballer, like, just because of everything.
All right. My favourite footballer in terms of talent would have to be Gareth Bale, who I think is probably the best player that I've ever seen. Certainly the best player I've ever seen playing for Spurs. Wow. He was just wonderful. You know, he saved AVB's first season, definitely. Mm-hmm. I've got a marvellous picture of he and AVB embracing after he'd scored. I think it was against Liverpool, probably. And when it was on my wall, and of course when Bale left, I took the picture down. But I might hang it.
Yeah,
as you do. So yeah, favourite player, Spurs player I've met who I've just liked, I'd probably say Michael Dawson.
I met him. I had a lovely selfie with him, and at the time we had a exactly the same haircut, so we looked like brothers.
He bonded over haircuts.
But he was charming, very very nice guy, and you could I think in years to come he'll you know how Mickey Hazard is wonderful with
yeah, what fans. A nice man.
And Robbo, Graham Roberts as well. The two of those are just such fantastic guys, walking around the stadium, chat to everyone, come on everybody's podcast all the time. I think Michael Dawson will be that guy in years to come.
Yeah, I think he's just, I mean, because he really is true Spurs. And another player I really, really like, although he wasn't with us for very long, of course, is Crouchy, Peter Crouch.
Oh, brilliant.
He's
so
amazing. Yeah, great bloke, very bright, terrific sense of humour. Yeah. And I sort of, I mean, as I say, he wasn't with Spurs for that long, but oh boy, he made a difference when he was there, didn't he?
I mean, Peter Crouch, done fantastic for us. And I never understood the criticism. And I always used to love him on the pitch because of simple things like, if we've got a corner, we've got Crouch in the box. If we're defending a corner, we've got Crouch defending it for us.
Yep.
I mean, how important is having someone who's a foot taller than everybody else?
Oh, exactly. And I love the way that I mean, if you watched him, he looked completely uncoordinated, as though he was sort of, I don't know, built with Meccano or something. But he was a really, really bright, intelligent player. He knew where to be, which is one of my theories that you know, there are certain players who are great because they just have that sort of speed of thought and vision where they can actually see where to be, where to pass. Dele has got it, of course, and which makes up for one or two of his sort of flaws. And Harry's got it as well.
Yeah.
You can spot it very early as well. Again, somebody like Gareth Bale, it was really obvious when he was first with Spurs that, I mean, he wasn't doing very well. He was playing left back or whatever, and but I looked at him and I thought he's just going to be fantastic because he knew where to be. Anyway, that's enough self-promotion.
I mean, just go back to Peter Crouch. One of my favourite Peter Crouch stories is I can't remember who he was playing for, but Prince William and Prince Harry walked into the dressing room. Might have been England. And Harry went up to Peter Crouch and went, "Oh, well done, dear boy, on bagging Abby. She's beautiful. How did you bag her?" So, I don't know what your response was.
I can imagine that.
Classic.
Yeah.
What about your favourite ever manager?
Oh, difficult one. My heart still belongs to Poch, I have to say, just because it's so nice, just lovely, and absolutely enormous, isn't he? I mean, when I met him for the first time, he felt it was like meeting a giant, literally. I mean, because I'm very short, I'm 5'1½, and just sort of looking up at this really good looking, towering guy. I was heartbroken when he left. I really was. I don't think I'm over it yet.
Hmm.
But if you want a list of managers before that, I do have a soft spot for Harry Redknapp, I have to say. Well, he got us in the Champions League, didn't he?
Absolutely, he did.
Yeah, yeah.
He seemed to buy You know, we moan at the moment about players that we're buying. We've done it for years, but Harry seemed to just buy the players that we needed at the time, like Peter Crouch, because we had Robbie Keane and Defoe up front, and he went, "Oh, we need a tall man. Let's go and get the best one, Peter Crouch. We're very weak in midfield. We need someone to win the ball. We'll go and buy Wilson Palacios. We need a bit of flair. We go and get Cranchar." So all that, he made some fantastic decisions.
Yeah, I agree. If you can hear some clunks, by the way, that we've got the window cleaner outside. Bit of domestic detail for you there.
No, that's fine. Social distancing, hopefully. what about your legend? Right, so just of all time, what player would you say is a legendary player?
Stefan Freund.
Well, it's the first time we've had him, that's for sure.
Yeah, a legendary. It depends on your definition of legend, doesn't it? Maybe he sort of qualifies more as a cult hero.
Yeah,
but he was just so funny. I mean, you know, again, a really, really amusing man. Yeah. Legend. It's such a huge term, isn't it?
So, I mean, the very first couple of the ones we did on this show, we said Diego Maradona. For whatever you think of him as a person, as a player, he's certainly the best player I've ever seen, and so he was me. Some people have said Messi will be, or Ronaldo will be, or we've had Johan Cruyff, somebody said. Pat, of course.
If you're talking about not Spurs, I'd definitely go with Cruyff. Because he was just completely different. Yeah. He really, a complete unique one-off job, as they say. Just a very, very special mind and special abilities. I've become a bit incoherent when I'm talking about him, but I would say definitely legendary status to him. Messi, Maradona, Ronaldo. Score a lot of goals, you know. But yeah, it was Johan Cruyff for me.
Yeah. Now, pardon the question.
Yep.
But you're the first person I can ask this to, and please don't take offence. Did you see Pelé play? Because none of us lot did.
Old.
I haven't got a clue. Was he that good? Because there's hardly any footage of him, and we keep getting told how good he was.
Well, I think I've seen the footage. Of course, he was good. Again, slightly different from, you know, the out and out kind of striker that you get with somebody like Messi. But he was just very influential at the time. My late colleague Hugh McIlvany was passionately fond of Pelé, but having not seen him play in the flesh, I couldn't really comment.
But out of the players that you have seen play in the flesh, who would you say is the most legendary player you've seen?
Oh dear, that's a difficult one. Well, Pat Jennings, I think.
Yeah.
Because I saw him play for Spurs, saw him play for Arsenal. He still looks amazing, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Got all his hair.
He's brilliant. He's a friend of the family, and he's so lovely every time you speak to him. In fact, the other day we were at Spurs and he was taking lots of photos with people, and he came over to me and my wife and my son, and he said, "Hi, how you doing? And how's your dad? And make sure can you text him like now and say who you're with?" And then he said, "Get your phone out. Let's take a photo." So it's him asking me to take the photo. He was absolutely lovely. You're thinking, my God, you know, pinch myself. He's the greatest ever goalkeeper in the world asking me to take a selfie to send to my dad.
Yeah,
so
that's him. The funny thing is, if you whenever you interviewed him, actually, during his playing days, he'd always, the first thing he'd say to you would be, "Don't mention the hands."
Yes.
Because... Yeah. I suppose he just got so fed up
He's
of people.
So fed up with it. I mean, I know not to do that. Sort of one of the things that my dad said to me the first time I ever met him. We went out for dinner, and my little sister, she's big sister now, but she was only about 10, and we were sitting there at the dinner table, and my sisters nudged my mum and said, "Look at his hands." And my mum's sort of gone, "Oh, no, you can't say anything." And she's sort of just, we're eating dinner, and she's literally, the whole meal, she's staring at his hands, because they're not just big, they're like this forest of hair, and they're a unique thing on their own. But yeah, don't mention them. So, I mean, the next question then is, who is your favourite ever goalkeeper? Have we already covered that?
I think we've probably already covered that, yeah.
And what about your favourite ever defender?
We have, if we're going Spurs, then probably have to say again Michael Dawson, in terms of sheer Spursness and goodness of heart. But yeah. I love Jan Vertonghen. I think he's absolutely fantastic. You know,
yeah, me too.
And he seems just a really, really cool guy as well. And he's a real athlete. If you obviously you'd understand as a runner, although he's sort of approaching his mid-30s now, he's just got that kind of athletic build, that he's got the sort of athletic heart rate and everything. I think he's the sort of player who could go on past his mid-30s, possibly not for Tottenham, but yeah. You know, one of those players who is just a real, real athlete as well as a footballer.
Yeah, yeah. Again, an absolute legend, who will, you know, hopefully come back in years to come and tell us all his stories. Brilliant. I've wondered, did you ever get to chat to, or certainly you would have seen Mike England?
Oh, yeah. Apart from doing an interview with him at one stage for The Observer, that my first meeting with Mike England was really, really embarrassing.
Can I pause you before you tell your story? Just the reason I mention him is because, as the listeners will know, he's a really good friend of my dad's. And in fact, Mike England phoned him last week and said, I've trawling through my phone and I've been chatting... He was chatting to some Pat. He was chatting to Pat, and then he was trawling through his phone, thinking who can I have a laugh with. And he got to my dad, and he phoned him and said, "Right, I want to have a laugh. I'm bored. Let's have a chat." So they're like old golf buddies. I haven't seen him for years and years, and I'm desperate. And I know Jason Evans is the guy. He has this Spurs shirt with 200 signatures and 199 photos, and he needs a photo with Mike England. And I'm desperate to set it up. And it's getting closer, Jason. So if you're listening, it is getting closer. But anyway, they had a good old laugh. But he's so brilliant. So Julie, what did you think when you met him?
Well, again, the first time I met him was actually in the press box, because after he retired, he started doing a bit with BBC Radio. And the press boxes in those days were really kind of, you know, crammed together seats. You were meant to have your own place and things like that, but people used to nick your seat and all that. Mm-hmm. And I marched in to do my report. And there was this guy sitting there with all the radio equipment set out, and, you know, a couple of guys next to him also with radio equipment set out. And I was so focused on what I was doing, I didn't think, "Oh, Mike England." I said to him, "You're in my seat."
No, did you?
Yeah, it was so awful. And he was really polite, you know, he apologised and got out the way and stuff like that, but I just, you know, how not to meet one of your heroes, basically.
But that's him. He's so polite, a gentle giant, very much like Pat. And in fact, he's got the ultimate "you're in my seat" story, which he's been on the show a couple of times, again a few years ago. And he just said the very first time they went away, did we buy him from Blackburn, I think, or someone? Anyway, he came in and he got on the coach, and all the players said, "Oh, you just sit down. You sit there, down at the front. All the new boys sit down the front." So he sat down, and anyway, this fella gets on, shirt and tie, and says, "Excuse me, you're in my seat." So Mike England turned round and said, "I don't see your name on it." Anyway, all the boys in the back are cracking up, and it turns out it was one of the chairman or the vice chairman or someone.
Oh dear.
So they wound him up and said, so with that one, so ultimate. So you did it to him. Brilliant.
Yes.
I love that. Right, so who is your, let's get through these questions. There's a few more to go. I hope you're all right with that. What about your favourite midfielder?
Let me have a think for a while. Well, it would probably have to be Modric in terms of what he achieved. But, you know, I really liked Christian Eriksen, especially the early Christian Eriksen. I love those sort of small, fragile-looking players who get really underrated. I suppose the prototype was John White. Mm-hmm. So I think, yeah, favourite midfield player, number one would be John White, the ghost of White Hart Lane, and then probably Luka Modric, and then Christian Eriksen, and they're all a physical type, which, as I say, is small, slight, blonde. They run a lot. They cover an awful lot of distance, and nobody ever they always get a lot of stick from the crowd because the crowd don't actually realise what they put in.
Yeah, because it's not about the tackles. It's not about the forcing, you know, being tough. It's about the delicate touch on the ball, which is so wonderful to watch. Dembele, you know, the way that he held on to that football, and Eriksen, I've said it before, I think he'll you know, obviously things are all up in the air at the moment, but I think as football goes on, and I'm almost hoping that he fails in Italy and he comes back to us. There's something in his contract that he can come back.
Yeah, maybe, but I mean, I'm always of the opinion you can't reheat a souffle. I think the Eriksen years have gone and they should never come back. I wouldn't like to see Gareth Bale back as well. It's a matter of sort of precious memories. They're not going to be the same. They're older. They're different. I don't hope he comes back.
Do you know who you sound like saying things like that? Flav from the Fighting Cock podcast.
Oh, right. Okay. Oh,
proper Spurs fans there talking. I'm a mere sider to you guys. Right. What about your favourite ever striker?
Oh, it's got to be Harry, hasn't it? I just love Harry. I just think he's a total man. He's so focused. I just so respect him. He does the right things. I like somebody who, you know, always does the right thing. I just think he's a complete role model. Brilliant, brilliant player. Everything, you know, he works hard on everything. He lives right. I like the names he called his daughters, Ivy and Vivian. I think those are really sweet names. He just seems, you know, like a real mensch. He's just lovely.
He, you know, married his childhood sweetheart. Wouldn't we all have loved to have done that?
Well, if I'd done that, it would have been a complete disaster.
Yeah, well, that's why we don't. Right, we're going to get a little bit quirky now.
Okay.
What football match made you cry? Is the list too long?
it's a long list. I'm terribly stiff upper lip about things, actually. I mean, I'm almost sort of, it's almost for me crying with happiness.
Are you stiff upper lip, but are you wobbly bottom lip?
If something bad happens to Spurs in a match, and I just feel really kind of low and depressed, and I wake up the next morning, I think, oh, we lost. But
this question can can apply to crying happy tears.
When we end of the 16-17 season, the penultimate game at the Lane, beating Arsenal, walked away crying with happiness just because, you know, the ghost was laid. And of course, the final game at the Lane. Oh, that was a blub fest.
Were you at that game?
I wasn't, unfortunately. I couldn't get a ticket. And,
what?
I can sometimes blag a press ticket, but that wasn't the day. So I was watching on telly, and it was just blubbing all the way through. It just remains one of the best memories. And I've sort of covered it in a chapter of the biography of Tottenham Hotspur. See what I did there. It's a chapter called Coity Saves the Day. It's about Paul Coit managing to get everybody off the pitch.
He was magnificent, wasn't he?
Yeah. Another legend. Lovely man.
Paul, the way he spoke to the crowd with no authority, didn't need to do that. He spoke to them because I'm a primary school teacher, and it really reminded me of when I really, really need something done. Don't raise your voice. Just, guys, can you please? And I'm going to have to do this because we're all back to school on the 1st of June by the looks of it. And I'm going to have to just go, can you please not scratch your face? Can you please just stay away from each other? And that's the way that Paul Coit did that, wasn't he?
Yeah. Oh, but Steve, good luck.
Would you mind awfully getting off the pitch so we can do the thing?
Yeah, absolutely.
He was absolutely brilliant, and I'm trying to get him on this as well, and he keeps replying with, I keep saying, Paul, can I hanky you down for a time? He's like, yeah, just DM me in the tweets, and then but I will get him on. He's been on before. He's absolutely brilliant. And there's a guy that has to pinch himself every day to for the job he does, and that's what he'll tell you. Did we get a match that made you cry then? Have we said one definitive match that made you cry?
Yeah, the penultimate game at the Lane.
And okay, what's the first football match you ever remember seeing?
I'm just trying to think back. It was my first visit to White Hart Lane in the old days when they had the really old West Stand. So we're talking late 60s. Mm. And I've seen so many matches that they all blur into one, which it was Spurs home to West Ham. And the tickets were given to me by Ron Greenwood, who was the West Ham manager at the time, because he lived quite near my parents. And he came to my parents' Boxing Day cocktail party. And I sort of chatted him up by saying, you know, I'm really, really keen on football, blah, blah. And he reached into his pocket and brought out these tickets for Spurs v West Ham.
Wow. So, I mean, the film, the glory days.
Not strictly true. I mean, that's fiction.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Because I was 12 when the double season was happening.
Yeah.
And young ladies, certainly with parents like mine, wouldn't let their girls go to football matches.
Yeah.
So I used to have to keep up with Spurs in the papers for a long time through my growing up, and occasional sort of passé news and stuff like that. So that was, I mean, you know, I have to sort of stamp very hard on this legend which has been created around me, because, you know, although there was a lot of me in that little 12-year-old girl, in terms of personality and character, it wasn't completely true.
Did you queue up?
I mean, it's all imagination. All that.
It's a brilliant film, though. It really is. And
the friends are true. The three friends that I had, they were real people.
Yeah.
And my parents' awful marriage was real. Mm. In fact, it was. I got a bit of stick from my parents for that. Obviously.
Yeah. But not the chewing Bobby Smith chewing gum.
No, that was that was invention. Although I would have done it.
Of course. But okay, brilliant. What about okay? Can you think of a funny moment in a football match? So the funniest moment or the funniest match you've ever seen? Something that's really made you laugh.
Oh dear, it's real slapstick. I can't remember the exact circumstances. It was a match I was reporting, but I think the darling Norman Hunter, who was taken from us so recently by coronavirus, he had his shorts pulled down by somebody during the game. So, you know, there was sort of, everybody saw Norman Hunter's bum, and I just thought that was really funny, and I still do. He was such a nice man, Norman. I was so sad when
lovely guy. Now, what about, what's the worst football match you've ever seen?
Probably anything involving Arsenal during the George Graham years. For some reason, I used to get sent to Highbury, their old stadium, quite a lot. I don't know why, but perhaps I was being punished by the sports editor. You know, I was for a few seasons, I seemed to be their kind of go-to Arsenal reporter. And I can just remember 0-0 draw after 0-0 draw, or, you know, 1-0 win to Arsenal. It was a punishing time.
And what about, have you ever been at a match or watching a match and you felt scared?
It depends what you mean by feeling scared, because the scariest experience I ever had was actually on the way to report an Aston Villa game. And you get off, if you go on a train, you get off at a little station called Wootton. You walk to a subway before, you know, joining the main road to the ground, Villa Park. And the crowd going through the tunnel was so dense that people were actually being swept off their feet. And I was swept off my feet. And I thought, you know, I'm going to fall, you know, fall on the ground. I'm going to be trampled. Yeah. And it wasn't so long before, you know, the Heysel Stadium and Hillsborough disasters. And that, I mean, I really was quite scared. When I got out the other side, I thought, oh, I'm just being stupid, you know, silly and hysterical. But, you know, I could see really how easily a crowd tragedy could happen.
Yeah, wow. So that's sort of the mid-80s.
We're talking, sort of early 80s, mid-80s.
Wow, okay. And then what about a couple of questions to go. is there a player that you used to love but you don't anymore?
Gareth Bale, because he left us.
I know.
The cad, the bounder, the rotter.
Did he have to go?
Well, I mean, footballers are like the rest of us. You know, if you're offered a better job with lots more money, you don't. What do? You go, don't you? Yeah. And that's what he did. But you know, he was out of my life from then on.
Do you know what clinched it for me?
What?
Somebody posted a picture in all the. It was all in the summer, wasn't it? And it was going. I was in Spain for quite a lot of it, and. Every day, this, I think it's called the Marca newspaper out there, was like, Bale signing today, Bale signing today, Bale signing tomorrow. And then someone posted on Twitter a picture of Bale when he was like 10 in a Real Madrid kit. And I thought, ah, okay, that's probably why he's definitely going to go. And of course, Levy got... as we know, the seven players in, waited till the very last day, and then eventually he went. And, you know, it's been years, what, 7 years, 8 years? He's been at Real Madrid now, and it seems like he's been there two or three, but he's actually been there for you know, virtually the whole of his career, which is, you know, thinking about it, it's like, wow, unbelievable. But you wouldn't have him back, though, would you?
No, I wouldn't. No. He is dead to me.
You're gone. You're gone. what about a player that you've defended over all these years? So somebody says to you, oh, that he was rubbish. And you're like, no, I quite liked him.
William Gallas.
Yeah, he was all right.
I thought he was decent, actually. Yeah. You know, he was a bit of a hand-me-down, one of Harry's hand-me-downs, but I thought he did a job, yeah. I wouldn't walk the plank for him or anything like that, but yeah, I thought he was okay.
Yeah. And now, look, let me just, I need to reiterate this because I said this on the last show with Lee McQueen, that I don't give you the questions. These are just questions that, I fire at you, and I want you to, the name that pops into your head, and the name that popped into your head there was William Gallas. That's interesting.
Well, I just remember because this is a memory. I was sitting with my friend Ivan Cohen. It was the day that Bale wasn't playing because his daughter was being born.
Right. And no, I'll tell you where I was. I love that. Right. So I was in the Bell and Hare. And I was out the back and we were talking about the game, and we were, at the time, we were on fire. We were really good. We were playing against Chelsea and they were on the down, and we were on the up. We were going to win that game. And then all of a sudden at 2 p.m. or whenever, you know, an hour before the game, some bloke shouts out, Bale's not playing. And then obviously everyone's on Google and so, and that was it. And we all went, oh, and the whole pub felt deflated.
Well, I think Chelsea won 4-2, something like that. But I just remember chuntering on to my friend Ivan saying, oh, you know, in my day, players wouldn't have ever have taken maternity leave or whatever. You know, he should be playing for Spurs. Who cares about his daughter being born? So, but I just remember for some reason that everybody was getting on Gallas's back that day. And I thought, well, you know, actually, not so bad. Yeah. But there you go. It's funny, these sort of links that you make, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, we've probably walked past each other many, many times at White Hart Lane. And have you been to the new stadium?
Oh, yeah, I was there for the opening night.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, me too. So,
and I was in the media centre. It was wonderful. I was absolutely blown away by the facilities for the press because, you know, in the past, press boxes and press rooms have just been, you know, the total pits. But they even have a woman's loo in the media centre. And I overheard a man sort of asking, saying, why is there a woman's toilet there? And somebody else said, Julie Welsh. So I'm responsible for getting a woman's, I'm responsible for getting a woman's lav in the press facilities.
And dare I say, was the reporter from the Daily Mail? No, don't go there. Don't go there with that.
I don't know, you see, because in my sort of working years as a, match reporter, there was a Daily Mail reporter called Jeff Powell, who still works, who was a total supporter of mine. He was brilliant. And because there were no ladies' loos, he would actually stand on guard outside the gents for me if I wanted to go to the loo. Yeah, yeah. So I can't trash the Daily Mail because what Jeff Powell did.
Well, my dad can't stand Jeff Powell, and for years and years he said, I can't stand him. My dad was always a Labour supporter, and now he's transformed. In his latter years, he's gone all fully right wing, which is doing my nut in, because I'm a primary school teacher, and of course we lean left. And for the last week, I've had to read Daily Mail headlines telling us that we need to step up and we need to be heroes and all this, and we're like, yeah, just tell us when. We'll go back. We love our job. That's why we do it. Just tell us when, and we're there. So it's been quite a strange time for teachers, obviously, because, everything that's been going on. And listen, you know, just for the record, we're desperate to go back. We love our kids, and that's what we want to do. So don't listen to any of this negative rubbish. You know, of course, when it's safe, so you know, as you do, but not safe for us. I mean, we don't care. It's safe for the kids. You know?
Yeah, I was saying to my husband just the other morning, actually, thank goodness our boys are all grown up now, because so we'd be worried stiff.
Yeah.
About sending them back in these circumstances.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's never been about us. It's all about the kids. Anyway, let's not get political. Final question. So, aliens come down from a spaceship. They bump into you walking down the road, and they say, "Ah, you are the famous author of this book, a football book, and you've done this film, and blah blah blah." And they say, "We don't know what football is. What is football?" And you say to them, okay, well, listen, here's a DVD, watch this, and this is what football is. What football match are you giving them to watch?
Whew. Well, I think, again, it's the last game at the Lane. It really sums everything up. You know, the love that we all have for Spurs, the passion that we have, the feeling that you know, your ground is your home. I don't think I can really explain it any better than that, but you know, the football match, that's the football match which I would have cited, with that, all those wonderful old players, the wonderful memories, everything about it, you know, the passion of the crowd, the way that everybody went onto the pitch, and the rainbow afterwards. It was just so perfect, and I would say to aliens, if you want perfection, then just watch that, and that will tell you everything about Spurs, everything about football, everything about human beings.
Now we've done about 10 to 15 of these My Spurs journeys, and there's only one other person that said that, and that was Mickey Hazard.
Ah, bless his heart.
There you go.
I'm honoured.
So that's brilliant. Well, Julie, that's it. I mean, fantastic. Is there anything you want to say about the current situation with Spurs and football and everything?
Is there anything I want to say about the current situation?
What are your thoughts? Because you wake up in the morning, you think about Spurs.
I just want it back. I want everything about Spurs back, you know, the joy, the rapture, the fear, the anger, the passion, all those feelings that we have about football, all those feelings we have about Spurs. I want it to be normal again. That's all.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to be normal, because I think they're going to play behind closed doors for a little while, but I mean, are you going to watch the games when they're on telly and everything?
It depends how emasculated it is. You know, if they've got to keep distance, if there's no contact, all that stuff. I mean, really? I mean, it'd be nice to sort of look at Eric Dyer again, because he's just so gorgeous. But you know, you can only do that for so long, can't you? So I don't know. That's a big I don't know for me.
Mind you, and I don't want to get into it, but isn't Eric Dyer going to be banned for that game? Let's not go there.
Let's not go there.
We're opening up a can of worms again. Oh, brilliant. Well, listen, it's been fantastic chatting to you. And again, you know, we watched the film the other day, and I'd have never thought in a couple of weeks' time I'd be chatting to you like this. And I haven't told my dad, but he's going to be thrilled when I tell him that I've chatted to you. Just wonderful. Thanks ever so much.
Okay. Cheers, Steve.
All right. Come on, you Spurs.
Yeah, come on, you Spurs.
Bye now. Thank you.
Bye.